Marilyn Kring Productions in association with Emergent Life Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 7, delivered on September 10th.
Today, financial statement analysis. As always, we begin with a quick review of the markets. And for that, we will find, ma'am, well, some are busy right now. Ma'am, good day or bad day on the street? Bad day. Is it a terrible day or is it just a meh bad day? Or is it kind of mixed? Yeah, we've got the Standard & Poor's and the NASDAQ are getting pounded. The Dow is down, not terribly, but the overall picture is of a day that is bearish. You see that all three of the heavies are down, although the Russell is up. Looking over at bond prices very quickly to see if the investors are pulling out, there's a stage one flight to quality. You see how the bond prices are rising and the stock prices are falling. In other words, investors are pulling out of stocks and they're moving to the safe harbor of bonds. That's a fairly strong bond upswing. So it's not that thing you saw where investors were selling both stocks and bonds and going to gold. They're selling stocks and they're moving into bonds right now. But nevertheless, if having a look at, well, did I go past? Yeah. Gold is actually down for the day. So in other words, there's not a terrible bearish sentiment, although it looks like silver is up a little bit. But the commodities in general aren't where investors are headed. They're headed out of these stocks, and then they're moving their money over to the safe harbor, as I called it, of bonds. Not a good thing by any means. We're still seeing that there is a bearish sentiment in the market. And it's coming from last week, which ended the week rather bearish. Ask my slush fund portfolio about that. But one way or the other, investors move with the moment as much as anything else. In the large picture, you don't do financial analysis of the market itself, but you do that on companies to look at their technical information and their fundamental information. As I said, numbers can take you only so far, and then sooner or later you have to ask more basic questions about the company. Yes, the numbers look good. Let's talk about what's going on underneath the numbers. Or yes, the numbers do look kind of bad, but let's talk about the fundamentals of the company. Management, markets, competition, potential for recovery. All of those things are certainly in the backs of our minds. So it's not enough to say, well, a company like Tesla, all the numbers suck. You have to go beyond that. The same with a Netflix. Well, I think this company's numbers are really bad, but I like the company anyway. Start with the numbers, but never finish there. Look, I don't want Chrome. I don't want Google snooping at everything I'm doing. Let's try this. We use accounting information to get broad pictures of what has already happened, recognizing that what has happened doesn't necessarily tell us what is going to happen. We also have to recognize that historical data, to a large extent, is already in the stock prices. Anything that has already occurred as far as the numbers go, as far as decisions. If it is in the past, investors have found out and they have put that information into the stock prices, at least if it's public information. Sometimes some hidden information will be sitting there waiting to be recognized and then put into the stock prices. So when I do what I'm going to do today, always keep in the back of your mind, this is looking at history. And you have to ask yourself, does that really tell us what the future of the company is going to be? In other words, what is an investment going to be worth? Because history has nothing whatsoever to do with your investment, how much you're going to make off an investment. You're going to make capital gains and dividend yield off what's going to happen. So you always keep that in mind when we pull these accounting numbers out and have a look at them on a technical level. Should I do a bad company or a good company? Your call. Bad? Oh, loves me, you students. You have a cynical heart. Let me think of something that really isn't doing so great right now. Well, let's Netflix and chill. Now I'm going to use the K's for this. You could use the Q's. However, the Q's are definitely good for the balance sheet, but the Q's kind of give you a difficult picture to interpret sometimes when you're looking at income statements. And I'll explain that in a little bit here. Netflix, here's their 10K. And here is their financial statements. Now, I don't want to pull these. Oh, well, I'm going to pull down the Excel. I'm going to show you a little bit of data parsing. In other words, I'm going to take this monster worksheet and I'm going to clear out some information that's not really going to do much good for me. Let me think here. The ones that I will need are the income statement. That one I don't need, the consolidated statement. Statement of cash flows, I will need that one. And the balance sheet. Now notice that the balance sheet gives us only 2 years. We can go in and fetch some more years if we want it from the 10K itself. There will be more years in there. But for the purposes of something like this, we're just going to take these. So what I'm going to do, bear with me, I'm going to highlight this one. And then these consolidateds. Well, shoot. Irritates me. Statement of cash flows, the balance sheet. Okay, so everything after that, whoa, I want statement of retained earnings. Let me see. Is this what I want? Yeah. It's a weird one, but let me get rid of everything after that. You don't necessarily have to do that, but it makes life a lot easier for you if you get rid of the ones you don't want. Because otherwise you're going to be running back and forth looking for your references and all of that. And you also, if your computer doesn't have a lot of memory in it, it's going to kill your memory. And this is, again, this is parsing and cleaning the data that you're using just to get rid of things that you don't want in your, good grief. Look at this. Okay. Now, let me delete all of these. Yes, I want you to delete them. No, I did that for my health. Are you sure you want to do that? Okay. Oh, this one, I want to get rid of that one. Yes. Okay, so now, that's the statement of retained earnings. This one, I don't need this one. Now, this may seem like I'm wasting a lot of time, but actually I'm not. consolidated balance sheets. What else can I get rid of? Statement of cash flows. And these two I can get rid of. Yeah, these two. And you'll see in a minute why this is kind of a nice thing to do. And I'm going to get rid of the document summary. Delete. Okay, so now I have a nice set of actual usable financial statements for basic financial analysis. The next thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to slip over here. I'm putting this up on VeggieNet for you. Yes, VeggieNet. And it should be there, but it hasn't been revealed yet. Come on. This is just a basic resources sheet for you. It gives your, well, where the heck is it? Let's try here. Resources. Okay, I don't have, it was supposed to be up there. I uploaded it, but it's not revealing, showing itself right now. Is it in my 341 class? Resources? Holy shiitake. Oh, well. I have a resources sheet, and I was going to, it was supposed to open tonight for you to use. And, it's not here. Oh, well. No big thing. I'll just wing it today for the time being. But there will be a formula sheet, and you can bring it to quizzes. You can bring it to your midterm and your final exam with you as a separate document for your use. That's really kind of depressing there. Oh, well. Let me get rid of that. We're going to use these sheets to get some information. But it's not enough to calculate the numbers. We would really, really like to see what those numbers tell us. First and foremost, profitability. Oh, goody, I've got a bad pen. Let me see if I have another one hidden under here that's better. I have this stupid purple marker. Maybe that'll do it. Profitability. First things first, if it is a manufacturing company, a production company of some kind, you will have something like revenue or sales or something like that. And then you will have minus cost of goods sold. And this will give you what we call gross income or gross profit. It is wrong, and it is done by some companies, to call it gross margin. It is not the gross margin. That's a ratio we're going to calculate. But this is gross income. It's the first of three incomes. There will be gross income, operating income, also known as EBIT. Get these in your notes, for heaven's sakes. The names are different for different companies. Like I have said before, we used to all be required to use the same words, but now there's a lot of variation. But anyway, there's three incomes. Gross income is the first one, operating income is the second one, and net income is the third one. Gross income is revenue minus cost of goods sold. And this is essentially how much money survived your wholesale cost. For example, I just sold at an exhibition a work for $425. It cost me $287 to make that. So $450 minus the parts that went into it, $287 is my gross on that. We call it your gross. And believe me, that can be gross. So the first thing that I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a worksheet, and I'm going to give it a name. It doesn't really matter where you put it. I'm going to call it ratios. And on Thursday, please bring, if you don't have them today, you can bring them out now. Bring them on Thursday. Yeah. It is your revenue minus your cost of goods sold. It is how much of every dollar that how much money that went into the cash drawer survived wholesale costs. That's not all of your costs, of course. The cost of goods sold recognizes only the actual things that went into the final product. It doesn't recognize things like your utility bills. It doesn't recognize things like wages and salaries. Okay, so now, on this sheet, I'm doing profitability. Okay, let's try that again. I'm going to do my profitability ratios. And among those, the first is going to be my gross margin. Now, I'm not going to do all the ratios today. I'm just going to do the broad outlines. More important today is to talk about what they mean. And the gross margin, first thing you have to do, by the way, I almost forgot to say this. Do you see that Netflix has not put in an actual gross income line? Companies used to be required to do so, and some companies still do, but they just roll on down from cost of revenues to marketing. So we are going to insert a line, gross income. And that will be revenue minus cost of goods sold. And then we're going to copy that over three lines. Just like that. Now, going back here, and apologies for not thinking about that, your ratios. Where are my stupid ratios? Oh, there they are. Huh, I screwed that up. Okay, profitability. This is going to equal, going back to your statement of operations, your gross income divided by your net income, your revenue, I'm sorry. Now, I'm going to, everyone has his or her own opinion of how many decimal places. I mean, this is actually a percentage. Write that down. Gross margin is a percentage. So I'm going to format it as a percentage to two decimal places. But there's another way to think about it. Gross margin, the ratio, is how many cents, C-E-N-T-S, of every dollar that came into the cash drawer survived wholesale. Again, gross margin is how many cents out of every dollar that went into the cash drawer survived wholesale. In the case of Netflix, for every dollar that came into that company through its operations, about 37 cents survived wholesale cost. Now, is that a good number or a bad number? We talk about that a lot on Thursday. It has to do, first of all, with the industry. Is this high for the industry? Is this low? Is it trending? Who knows at this point? But we'll see that later. So it's hard to say much about it. In some companies, you will see the industry has a gross margin of like 60, 70 cents. Others, you'll see the gross margin. I mean, I got kind of surprised. I think it was spring semester. I pulled a company, and its gross margin was like 18%. I thought, this is terrible. And then that evening, I looked at the industry. Oh, that's pretty normal for that industry. In other words, their wholesale costs eat up a lot. Anyway, that's the gross margin right there. The next one would be the operating margin. The operating margin is after all of the expenses have been taken out. The wholesale and all of those expenses that can't be attached to an exact good. And in this case, that would equal, okay, go back to the income statement, operating income divided by revenues. And again, we're going to make this one a percentage. Format the cells, percentage. So in this case, out of every dollar, the number comes out to be 0.1016, or 10.16%. This is saying out of every dollar that went into the cash drawer, about 10 cents survived all of its basic costs. Wholesale costs, mailing, meals and entertainment, wages and salaries, the SG&A stuff, even depreciation expense, which really it shouldn't be there, is in there. So we're narrowing. See how you're losing money all the way down the line? It begins to hurt like hell. By the time and we haven't even dealt with interest expense. We haven't dealt with taxes. Okay, and the last one that we would do with this in this little three-step here would be the net margin. And that one is net income divided by revenues. 0.076688, and I'm going to turn that one into a percentage. Actually, best practices is to wait until you've done all the numbers to do the formatting, but I want to talk about each other. In this case, for Netflix, of every dollar that went into the cash drawer, about 7 2/3 cents made it to the shareholders. Let me say that again. In the case of Netflix, about 7 2/3 cents, a little less than eight pennies of every dollar that the company pulled in through its operations made it to the place where it belongs to the shareholders. Now, at this point, the company can give some of it as dividends and plow back the rest. The company could give it all as dividends and not put any back in. Or the company, in Netflix's case, it doesn't give the shareholders any dividend. It just puts it right back into the company on behalf of the shareholders to make the company grow faster. And ideally, theoretically, to cause the stock price to go up. So the shareholders in Netflix's case wouldn't see a dime of dividends, but they should see capital gains. Whether or not they will depends upon how management uses those 7 2/3 pennies of every dollar. So that makes Netflix a higher risk company because you're rolling your dice with the management. Okay, there are a couple of other ones here too. And I'll talk more about these on Thursday. I'll talk about them. There is the return on assets. And there's a return on equity. Here we think about the company as a portfolio of assets, just like stocks and bonds and ETFs and mutual funds and derivatives. The company's assets are a portfolio, and you expect them to perform. So, for example, you four are all assets of my company. Well, that's wonderful, but I mean, I am paying you to create value for my shareholders. So maybe you two work really hard. You know, on good days, you do a little work. And you, I don't know why I'm keeping you. Okay, your dad is my major investor. Whatever. Okay, the thing, though, is that what we need to see is, are we making that portfolio of assets create value for the company? In other words, what I'm going to do in this one is I'm going to say, I want to take net income for return on assets. I want to take net income right here, and I want to divide that by the total assets of the company right here. So essentially, I'm looking for the yield on my assets. I'm looking for the yield on my assets. So that comes out to be 0.046632. And that one, again, I will turn into a percentage. So in other words, for the last fiscal year, Netflix's total assets returned as a portfolio 4.66%. Madam, does that look like a good number? Would you love to have a portfolio that returns you 4.66% per year? We need to talk. No, that sucks. That is horrible. That is ugly. Bad ROA. Bad ROA. Well, maybe it's not. Maybe that's the industry. But if I had a portfolio that yielded 4.66%, good grief, I could get more than that out of investing in a pile of low beta stocks. So in other words, based upon this number, Netflix is earning, though, is making its assets, is creating the conditions for its total asset base to pull a lousy 4.66%. Well, let's see that. Okay, let's see how we're doing for the shareholders based upon just their money in retained earnings. So we'd say this time return on equity equals, and I'm going to go back to the income statement, and I'm going to say net income divided by, and this time I'm going to look at total shareholders' equity right there. Now, this should be a larger number, and it is 23.12%. And I'll format that as a percentage. Well, I'll be darned. That's a decent number. I'd sure like to have a portfolio that does that. 23% per year? Yeah. So there is a distinct difference between the ROA and the ROE. That's not unusual. They should be separated. This, by the way, will become the basis, and I think I promised you this. These two numbers right here. See these two numbers? This is the basis for showing you how you can become millionaires. you personally. Not even a joke, I can show you how it's done. You can become millionaires with essentially what constitutes almost a numbers trick. Now, I'm not recommending you do it because you could become a millionaire, or you could become so poor that you live on the street where I will be living when I retire. And I don't want to live near you because you snore. So you want to keep that in mind. Now, here's something, by the way. This was, what year was that? That was fiscal 2018. Okay, so these ratios here at the top were 2018. However, Center, I can also talk about 2017 and 2016. And it's pretty easy to do. Although, if it's something that, if it's called on the balance sheet, I'm going to get errors. And I can even show you how to deal with that. But what I'll do is now, I'm just going to highlight all of them, grab that little handle down there at the bottom, and pull it across. And as you can see, you get that there is no balance sheet numbers for 2016. But that makes this a whole lot easier to do, a whole lot easier. Now, I have done the profitability ratios, and I'm going to indent those. Now, I'm going to go down, and I can look at a couple of different things, but let me look at the liquidity ratios. Now, it's important here, and this is in my formula sheet. There are so many ratios, it almost blinds you. You choose your favored set. There's kind of a basic set that we do in a class like this, and even in a more advanced class. However, there are other ratios, and I'm going to show you one of those other ratios here. You're responsible for it. It's not in the book. You probably wouldn't find it in anything but an older financial ratios textbook or manual. Although recently I saw a financial analyst who actually used it in his analysis of a company. He called it something else, but it was this one. But to start off, okay, the first one is called the current ratio. Now these ratios see how much liquid cash is the company, how liquid is the company. Now, there's the current ratio. There is the quick ratio, sometimes called the acid test. You'll hear me call it acid. That's an old name for it. You'll also hear some other analysts call it acid as well. And then there's the one that I mentioned before, the burn ratio. Now, I'm going to add some to this, but first thing I'm going to do is look at this after I've put in some basic ratios. Now, the current ratio is pretty simple. It's going to be nothing but your current assets divided by your current liabilities. If I could find the current, there it is. Now this number, this is not a percentage. This is actually a multiplication factor. The number comes out to be 1.49437 here. 432, I'm sorry. What that actually says is that with current assets, it could pay its current liabilities almost 1.5 times over. Again, with its current assets, if it liquidated all of its current assets, it could pay off the current liabilities 1.49 times over, about 1.5 times over. That's highly liquid. Now, is that a good number or a bad number? It depends on what you want to talk about. More liquidity means, oh yeah, we can take care of our current liabilities. However, liquid assets don't earn you much of anything. They actually drain you. Current assets aren't going to make any money for you. If I've got $100 in my pocket, I can pay $100 of bills right away, like I would. But there's no interest on it. So liquidity can be too high or it could be too low. The next one is a little bit of a twist on it. If I look at the current assets, look up here. Now, Netflix is a little hard. Usually you'll see a line that says inventories. For Netflix, that's this current content assets net. That's what that is. It's inventory. You would usually see this line called inventory, but apparently Netflix wants to look new age and not call it that. But whatever you call it, that stuff is almost worthless. It really is. If there were a fire sale today, you couldn't get a dime on the dollar for inventory. That's just the way it is. Think about it this way. And I brought this one up a while back, but a retailer named H&M, I'll bet you're all familiar with it. It had parked in inventory over $1 billion worth of apparel. Just $1 billion just sitting there. And of course, it's on the balance sheet. There's $1 billion. And so what does that mean? That's pretty much just throw it away or give it to charity. Although you probably wouldn't want to give it to charity because that kind of like sends a message. Don't buy our stuff and then we'll give it to poor people. So you burn it instead or something like that. I hate to say that, but that's about it. In other words, that inventory sitting there is worthless. My inventory especially sitting in a storage unit, it has no value at all. I mean, I could put up a sign, come to my storage unit, tell me what you'll pay. I'll pay $1 for that one right there. That's kind of pretty, put it in my outhouse. It's not going to be worth anything. So what I want to do is say, let's get a little real here. I'm going to say, the quick ratio is equal to, and open parenthesis. This time I'm going to take the total current assets minus that inventory. And close a parenthesis, and then divide it by current liabilities. So this one is a more realistic question. If you exclude your current assets that really aren't going to generate any money really quickly. Yeah.
You said that it's current assets minus what?
Minus your inventories. In this case, inventories for Netflix are called current content assets. So in other words, we're going to get real here and say, if we had to liquidate our current assets tomorrow to pay off all of our current liabilities, what are we talking about? Ouch. Number gets a little bit less pretty right there. We could pay off about 70% of our current liabilities with the current assets that could generate money for us. Now I'm going to format these three, current, quick, and burn. I'm going to format those to 4 decimal places. Format the cells as numbers to 4 decimal places. I mean, really getting too much accuracy doesn't mean much. Now the burn ratio. The burn ratio. I want you to think, sir, about the zombie apocalypse. These are the current liability zombies, and they are at your door. They want your current asset brain. But they don't want all those fluffy parts. They want that meaty yellow part, okay? So in other words, first you try to throw out things like inventory to them. Don't want that. Then you throw out your accounts receivable. Where are we going to sell these? Don't want that. You throw out your prepaid expenses. What are this for? All they want is what is in that meaty part, the cash. That's the burn ratio. Never mind all the current assets. Really, a lot of those aren't going to turn. You can't turn into cash. You can't turn into something that could pay off. So in this one, all we do is just say the burn ratio is nothing but the cash and cash equivalents, or the cash and marketable securities. Sometimes there's two lines, divided by the total current liabilities. And now Netflix is down to, it could deal with only about 0.585. Or in other words, it could pay off with its really liquid current assets. It could pay off about 58.5 cents of its current liabilities per dollar. That's what that says. That's a liquidity ratio. Now, there are a few other ones here that I could go into, but and I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to do some more on the next pass, but I want to get these down and then talk a little about them. Oh, now, also, of course, I can't take these, oh, any of these over because I've got only 2 years of balance sheet, so I copy that one and bring it over one. We're going to go back and we're going to say, okay, let's look at these kind of on a trending kind of thing. Do the debt coverage ratios. The debt coverage ratios, the first one, I'm going to give you a question that will show up on your midterm and or your final. I'm going to give you a question right here in a second. The first one is called the times interest earned. The times interest earned is equal to your balance sheet. Oops, income statement, sorry. Wait, where the heck? Oh, there it is, over there, sorry. Okay. Okay. Your operating income. This is how much money the company has to pay its interest expense divided by that interest expense. Oh, and that you should put that as an absolute, ABS, open parenthesis, close parenthesis. Absolute value. Netflix can pay its current obligations to its debt holders 3.8 times over. Go. Okay, it is, well, let me write this one down. This one is nothing but your operating income divided by your interest expense. Now, make that an absolute value. Use the ABS, open parenthesis, close parenthesis, because it will probably be on the balance sheet as a negative number anyway. This thing tells us how many times over the company can cover its interest expense. You see, If that number comes out to be less than one, the company is dead. It can't pay its interest expense. The debt holders just walk right up to the plate and close that company in bankruptcy. The company would then run to the bankruptcy court to get protection, and all hell breaks loose. So that number needs to be above one. However, it should not be way above one, because eventually the company is saying, we don't use debt in our capital structure. We don't use enough. And when you don't use debt, you're denying the shareholders the gains to leverage. Using debt makes the return on equity go up. What does that mean in practice, though, is subjective. Where do we get worried? Well, I get worried when I see a times interest earned floating close to 2 or below. I also get concerned if I see a times interest earned that's going above probably 8 to 10 or above. Netflix is beginning to bother me a little bit. This is a rather low times interest earned. And looking at the 3 years altogether, I'm just curious here. Oh, now that's scary. They were down in 2016, clear down to 2.53. That's getting to be worrisome. See how it's drifting closer, and it was near one? That's the kind of thing that says they're getting here. They had only 2.5 times their current interest obligations to pay those obligations. That was scary. That would explain why when they borrowed money, that massive pile of money, you know, they were paying junk bond coupon rates for that. Now here's the other one. Debt to total assets. All you do is say, okay, here, be a little careful. Normally, when we do this, we go to the balance sheet, and we say equals. Now, I'm not comfortable with this, but I believe the textbook does it this way, too. It says, go to your balance sheet and find your long-term debt. See this one right here? It's usually the dominant one. I would prefer to use all of your long-term liabilities. But most of them use only the long-term debt. So we'll take the long-term debt divided by the total assets. Netflix is, write this down, the capital structure of Netflix is 40% debt. And this number is all over the board. The higher this number is, the more leveraged the company is. Put that down. The higher the debt to total assets number is, the greater the leverage of the company. Leverage is what accelerates growth. It's what I will show you can make you a millionaire if you're not afraid to use it on Thursday. It really works, and it's just mathematical. But it's also higher leverage creates higher risk, because you're at greater risk that you won't be able to make enough money to pay your interest expense. So it's a double-edged sword. And I can take this one back, the debt to asset one. By the way, these you can write as a percentage. Look at that, though. Netflix is becoming more leveraged. Do you see that? Look at 2017 versus 2018. Do you see that Netflix has become a more leveraged company? Interestingly, though, it's been able to keep its times interest earned going up. That would most likely be through accelerating revenues or cost cutting up higher on the income statement. But one way or the other, those are debt coverage ratios. I'm just going to throw a few more up here, and then I'm going to show you something else. Okay. Asset activity. Now, honestly, I don't remember if the book you put one of these ratios in here or not. But one thing is, okay. I'm going to write asset turnover. You might have to think about this one to see what it means. I'm going to take equals now, some use revenue, some use net income. I think I'm going to use revenue for this one. And I'll correct it if the book disagrees with me. I'm going to take, how many times over? I'm going to take the company's revenue. And I'm going to divide that by the company's total assets. This says if you think of the assets as creating money, how many times last year did those assets become money? Revenue. In the case of Netflix, only 0.6. You will oftentimes see this number above 1. Heck, you can see it above 10. I mean, Amazon, I'm going to run the number here in a minute. I'll show you Amazon. If I recall, I did Amazon in a class last year, and it was some insane number like 19 or 20. It turned its inventory into money. You know, like I was on Amazon two nights ago. I ordered some shavers and I clicked the okay button and I heard the doorbell ring. There were my shavers. You know, they are just ridiculous how fast they get things. But this actually kind of surprises me a little bit. Now there's another one, the inventory turnover. This one, I'm going to do the same trick, except not just all of the assets. I'm going to say, how many times over did they flip their inventory? So in this one, I'm going to say, this one equals their revenues divided by their inventory. And that would be for Netflix, their current content. They turned that over 3 times. They turned that over three times. Now, again, these numbers can be all around the place. You see, there's a trade-off. And I don't know if you've had the management class or not yet. But there's a trade-off. You see, it's sort of ideal to have your inventory move really fast. Because the more inventory you have building up, the more it costs you. Because you've spent money on it, so there's the opportunity cost. You've got to have warehouse space to keep it in, so there's that cost. So ideally, you want to turn over inventory very quickly. However, there is a cost to doing that. And it's simply getting it out the door, getting it sold out of the warehouse is a cost. Amazon, interestingly enough, it's willing to take that cost. However, it does not take that whole cost. Amazon actually moves some of that cost to the environment. Have you ever seen how much box cardboard material Amazon uses on a daily basis? It is madness. So in order to get that stuff moved out of the inventory, it has to be boxed and shipped, which means that those boxes become someone else's problem. They don't have to remediate the main packaging that they use. But they're able to do it. No one's fussing about it. So they're able to move one of the costs associated with rapid inventory turnover. Amazon doesn't have to worry about. So there you are. Now, let me look at Netflix here. I'm going to format these, I suppose, four decimal places, I guess. And then I'm going to move these two over. So notice that Amazon is moving its inventory faster than it did before. Interestingly, its total asset turnover is just sort of sitting there looking stupid. But it is moving inventory faster. Now the question is, how's it doing that? Can you tell me? You're not an entertainment kind of guy. How is Netflix doing this? How is it flipping its inventory faster? You got anything? You have to, honestly, I wouldn't, if someone actually said it, I'd be a little bit surprised. They're moving their shows in and out faster. You notice that if a show doesn't perform the first season, it's gone sometimes even within a season now. Used to be they'd hold on to a show for 3 years or four. And now if a show doesn't get enough of an audience, they just dump it right out. And in fact, in terms of, have you noticed that there are some movies that show up on Netflix and then 4 weeks later, it's not there anymore? That just pisses me off. I wait, for the semester's end so I can watch the movies and they're gone. So I have to go over to Amazon and pay rent for them because they're not on Amazon Prime. Okay, that's how they're doing it. They're just moving movies in and then out, and they're also getting rid of series faster if they don't show performance levels that meet their criteria. So that's how they're increasing their inventory turnover. And you're seeing this also. Amazon's doing this too. These content providers are not waiting around with these things in inventory. They just dump them off, and then they disappear from inventory. They sell them out to someplace else, or they cancel their arrangement with the original distributors and all that. So that's how they're pulling that stunt. It's actually good news, although they may alienate more customers as they keep doing this. Sometimes some of the best shows actually take a few years to get an audience, and then they proved to be the smash hits of all time. A good example of that would have been years ago, Supernatural, and it had only weirdos like me watching it the first 2-3 years, and then all of a sudden everyone realized this is epic. So there were some others that were like that too. Not all shows are hits in the first few years. Netflix is just saying, oh, well, who cares? Now, there are other ratios in here, too. But before I, well, actually, I can copy this one over, too. No, I can't. Asset turnover, I cannot. Okay, now, I'm going to do one last thing here. Do this after you've put in all your ratios. And I'll do a full ratioed thing on Thursday. And by the way, I'm going to give you a surprise quiz on Thursday, too. Okay, so please act shocked and surprised. Nothing on this chapter. I don't do that to you. I wait until you forget it before I... So, there's going to be a surprise quiz on Thursday. Okay, so now I'm going to do something here. I'm going to insert a column. And then I'm going to insert a column here. So in other words, between the original B and C, I'm going to insert a column. And then between the original D and E, I'm going to insert a column. Now here is where I'm going to find my percent changes. And here I'm going to do percent changes. But I'm not going to do it just here. I'm also going to do it a couple of other places. I'm going to look at some percent changes in my income statement. I'm going to insert a row between 18 and 17. And I'm going to insert a row between 17 and 16. And I'm going to do the same thing on the balance sheet. I'm going to insert a column between B and C, between 18 and 17. Do this after your analytics, for God's sake. Those ratios and all that, because then it will adjust, Excel will automatically adjust everything. If you do it before, then you've got a mess on your hands. But look at my ratios. See, my ratios are still intact. So do this later. Now the percent changes. Well, no, let me do the income statement's changes first. Now remember the formula for a percent change equals the ending value, in this case, revenue 2018, minus the beginning value, revenue in 2017, divided by the beginning value, revenue in 2017. Boom. Now you're going to have to format all of these. Matter of fact, I'm just going to highlight all of these and make these, format the cells percentage to two decimal places. You say, okay. And then I'm going to do the same thing over here for 2016 to 2017 equals the ending value, revenue 2017, in parentheses, minus the beginning value, revenue in 2016, divided by the revenue in 2016. Right off the bat, talk to me. What do you see from the revenue change in 16 to 17 versus 17 to 18?
It increased more.
Yeah, well, it increased. In other words, their revenue is accelerating. Revenue is accelerating. So that's right off the bat. Now, let's have a look at something else. Matter of fact, let me honk these all down, and I do recognize I'll get some errors here in blanks. Try that again. And then drag this one down too. And then get rid of some of these that are, I'll show you a way you don't have that happen, but not right here. Cost of goods sold from 16 to 17 increased by 42%. Cost of goods sold from, no, by 28.37%. Cost of goods sold from 17 to 18 increased by less, 24.08%. So in other words, Netflix is bringing down its growth rate of cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold grew by 28% from 16 to 17, but it grew by only 34%, by 24% from 17 to 18, which means that your gross income for Netflix from 17 to 18 grew by 42%, but from 17 to 18, it grew by 59%. That was purely by bringing their cost of goods sold under control. Stronger negotiation for content and all of that. So these are very good signs for Netflix. These are good signs. Marketing, oh God, look at, ouch. Wow. Operating income grew by 120% in 16 to 17, but it grew by less in 17 to 18. That's not good news. Yeah, they brought down their gross grew, but their operating did not grow as much as it had the year before. That would be because of costs along the way, and it looks like marketing is what ate them alive. Do you see how marketing grew, the marketing cost grew by 31% from 16 to 17, but it grew by a staggering 65% from 17 to 18. And the consequence was here, their operating income did not grow as much from 17 to 18 as it had from 16 to 17. Just one last one, net income grew by almost 200% from 16 to 17, but it grew by only 117% from 17 to 18. In other words, the company is sliding in terms of its ability to bring money down to the bottom line for its shareholders. I think I'm going to let it go right there. That's all I have for you. I thank you.